This episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is brought to you by Scentbird and Simple Health.
Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, feminist ho living in New York City, and...
Akua, one cold, but... content ho.
Yes, that's how I feel also. On this show, we have two types of episodes. They are group episodes and interview episodes. On interview episodes, I, Sam, the principal host of this show, and one of my lovely rotating co-hosts talk to folks with insightful perspectives on sex, love, dating, gender, and or race. And on group episodes, we all come together to chat about sexual current events in the world, our lives, and yours. This episode is a very dope-ass interview episode, I must say. One of my faves. Not to pick like a favorite child, but this is one of my favorite
It's
episodes.
It's leading right now.
This is leading the pack. In our last interview episode for the year. Yay. We did a whole 2018. Oh my God. Today we're speaking with the black feminist powerhouse, Feminista fucking Jones, my nigga. Feminista Jones, about the complexities of being a black person who is into BDSM, bondage, and being a sex slave. We'll also be discussing her upcoming, highly anticipated book called Reclaiming Our Space. And we get into like race and patriarchy and the history of African Americans as it pertains to sex and mad stuff. It was so good.
There's trauma.
Mental health therapy.
It's
good stuff.
Theory and everything.
Yes. So before we get into that, we're going to...
Do some housekeeping things. And first off, if you like to follow this conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag Inner Ho Uprising so we can see it and hashtag pod in so other people can see it.
And if you would like to pay us to speak at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, we would love to do so. So please to book us, send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to pay a hoe or check out our merchandise. You can do so by going to innerhouseuprising.com. You can click the tab Pay a Hoe Once or Pay a Hoe Monthly. Pay a Hoe Once takes you to our PayPal where you can drop any monetary donation that you like. $1, $1 billion, whatever you want to do, that helps sustain the show because sometimes we have to go to studios like for this episode and we have to still build our own wig crucifix studio because there's no mic for Rob. There's no mic for Rob right now.
And y'all know y'all want to hear Rob.
Exactly. I think it would just be Rob taking your mic though. Sorry. Rob would bully you. Akua is saying no, Rob is not taking
not my mic. I like to speak.
So, I mean, I guess it's ridiculous. Rob's not going to take my mic. I put y'all here, so ain't nobody going to take my motherfucking mic. Nah. So as to not have beef, how about you guys pay a hoe once or pay a hoe monthly? To pay a hoe monthly, you can go to patreon.com/innerhoeuprising, which is our Patreon. That's more of a sustainable kind of donation. So it is one monetary amount. Once a month. So you can do something like $2 a month. And with $2 a month, we do offer the reward of giving you early access to ticketed IHU events. And for the price of $5 a month or up, you get early access to ticketed IHU events, as well as access to behind the scenes video content and our holy newsletter. You can donate any less or any more. It is just a more sustainable way and consistent way to pay a hoe. But anything is appreciated. Other things that are appreciated are Apple Podcasts. Podcast reviews, tweets, write-ups on your blog, links in your group chat, nudging your coworker like, hey, you don't want to listen to this nigga, the manager, talk anymore? Listen to these niggas. Or walking down the street wearing an Inner Ho Uprising shirt. You know how you can get an Inner Ho Uprising shirt? By going to innerhouseuprising.com/merchandise. That takes you directly to our merchandise page where you can buy a crop top, a logo shirt, a respect and protect women shirt, my favorite shirt. You can buy a pin, you can buy a button, you can buy a sticker, and in the future you'll be able to buy more stuff. Also, if you want to compete in sex trivia, you can do that with us every first Sunday of the month. So January 6th, we're gonna be up in Love Story on the corner of Bushwick and Ridgewood to do our monthly sex trivia event. We're pushing up the time a little bit because last time it was a little bit too late. People were tired, including us. Yeah. So our next sex trivia event is going to be Sunday, January 6th from 6 to 8 p.m. at 894 Wyckoff, which is Love Story Bar. More on that in the description of this episode, but it's very fun. You can compete by yourself or you compete with a team. And at the end, whoever wins gets a prize.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's cool.
All right. Now, before we get into this juicy conversation with Feminista Jones, got to remind you, this episode of the Inner Ho Uprising is brought to you by Scentbird. So smelling good can be expensive, y'all. And when you're broke like me, sometimes you can't drop $100 on a fragrance, especially one that you don't even plan on using in the long term because you want to switch up your scent. This is why I like to use Scentbird.com, a luxury perfume service. So I like to call Scentbird the hotation of perfume purchases. If y'all are like me, you like to switch it up. You like to switch up your sexual partners, your hair, your style of dress, and with Scentbird, you can even rotate around what you smell like and not break the bank while doing it. So what I like about Scentbird.com is that they offer you a bunch of different perfumes and they categorize it in these cute little categories for you depending on what you want to smell like and where you want to take your scent. So there's categories for perfumes that remind you of date night or colognes that give you that musky kind of scent, things that are fresh and like linen, things that are flowery. Everything that I've ever wanted to try out is basically on this website and I'm freaking loving it. So Scentbird has over 450 designers brands and you choose one every month. So anything from Prada to Gucci, Kate Spade, Ness, Ferragamo, Tom Ford, but like actually, not some toilet water in a vial off the shady part of the internet. This stuff is actually legit. Although if you want to smell like toilet water in a vial, I mean, by all means do you. However, if toilet water in a vial is not your thing and you want to add some scents to your personal rotation of perfumes and colognes, you can choose a perfume from Scentbird and they'll send you a 30-day supply. Now, folks did some math and calculations and concluded that that's actually 120 sprays. So you always smell amazing and shipping is free all the time. Skip the department store and the pushy salespeople spraying fart water directly into your eyes. It's disgusting. I hate those people. They're very rude. That's why you scentbird.com. And with this exclusive offer, you'll get 50% off your first month today. That's only $7.50 for your first perfume. That's S-C-E-N-T, bird.com/ho. Use our code HO, that's H-O-E, for 50% off your first month. That's 50%. That's half. You spent mad money on like your Christmas gifts or your Hanukkah gifts or your Kwanzaa gifts or your, I don't know, rent. Now you get this discount. That's cool. That's nice. Scentbird.com/HOE. Sign on and smell amazing. Now, Feminista Jones, kink, black womanhood, sexual history of African Americans, all good stuff. Let's get into it. All right, so now we're going to get into our topic of the day, which is called Fuck It. And we have a very special guest today. So excited to have her in the building.
I'm trying to like low-key not stand, but like low-key bow.
We got Feminista Jones in the building.
Hello.
Yes. Thank you so much for being here.
So this is called the Fuck It section.
Yes.
All right. Well, fuck it. Let's go.
Exactly. You get the vibes already. All right. So.
All right.
Intro, Feminista Jones is a Philadelphia-based social worker, feminist writer, public speaker, and community activist. She's an award-winning blogger and the author of the erotic novel Push the Button, the poetry collection The Secret of Sugar Water, and the highly anticipated Reclaiming Our Space, How Black Feminists Are Changing the World from the Tweets to the Streets. Her work centers Black American culture, critical race theory, intersectionality, women's health, and well-being. She joins us today to talk about kink, race, patriarchy, sexuality, and the history and cultural complexities of being an African-American woman who is into BDSM.
All in less than a day.
An amazing human being. Amazing conversation to follow.
I've done some things.
You've some done things.
So yeah. many fucking...
Like...
A little bit of the reason why the show was started is because of Push the Button and because of I wasn't amazing. Even considering anything outside of my very monogamous look, ass, vanilla ass relationship look, back in the day.
So I get that a lot and yeah. I love it. Mm-hmm. I love when people say, you know, your book really helped me do X.
Yeah.
And that actually just happened the other day. And this book came out 4 years ago and still it's, you know, it's people resonating. Are getting it and they're just like, wow, I can actually live a so-called normal life and also live according to my truth. So
yes.
I love that yeah. it reached people in that way. So that's great.
Blessings. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So starting off with kink, and then we're going to use this to dive into these really complex things that I'm very excited to talk about. So just tell us a little bit about your space in the world of kink. When did you get into it? How and why?
Okay, so this year I'm happy to be celebrating 20 years since I became active in the kink lifestyle. My first experience was at age 19. Now, before that, I'd been interested, right? We all read the books and saw the magazines.
Yes.
And, you know, but it was 19 when I had like my first experience with a male dom. And I was like, well, I like this. I don't like him, but I like this.
Wow, oh, no, it's like
that,
huh?
Oh, no, he was a jerk, right? And it kind of sucks. So part of like why I was writing in the book, it's like your introduction to this can be negative, but it doesn't change the fact that this is who you are, right? So, you know, that started. And I think from then it was just like there were times where I was deeply involved. There were times where I pulled back because I had other things to do. There were relationships that I was in that allowed me to do it. And there were some that were just like, that person's not really it. But I think I got to a point where I was just like, yeah, so no, any relationship I'm going to be in is going to have this element because this is just who I am.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that I went through this evolutionary process, particularly as I was trying to understand my own like sexual identity and orientation and things like that. And like, what is my place in the lifestyle? And I would consider myself a switch for those who don't know that a switch is a person who can go from being a top to a bottom in whatever situations. And I found that what I learned was that I would choose to bottom and confuse that with submission. And so I felt that I had to be a submissive in order to be able to bottom.
Mm-hmm.
When truthfully, I just was a masochist and I just liked bottoming. I liked, you know, the pain and the fun parts of that.
Uh-huh.
But I had to learn to separate the two because I was like, there ain't a submissive bone in my body.
Mm-hmm.
And I also realized that a lot of it was internalizing, right? Patriarchal norms
yes.
and things like that. And kind of like, this is what you want. This is what you want to do. But I think actually my last partner was the one who was like, you ain't no sub. And he was like saying it kind of insultingly, but I was like, you know what? You just might be right, motherfucker.
Were
like,
you subbing at the
yes.
time?
Yes. And it was just like... And I was just like, you just might be right. And it kind of opened my eyes. I was like, no, I think for me, I think I finally reached my full final kind of image and being, and it is definitely as a dom who does occasionally bottom for some experienced tops, but 100% dom.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah. So that, but it's a journey, right? And that's, I say that because it was a 20 year journey, and I say that to anybody that is like new to the lifestyle, like who you are right now doesn't have to be who you are in 2 years. Remain open to the possibilities. Like forget whatever other nonsense you're being told, just go with what feels right for you.
Does it necessarily have to be a 20-year journey?
No,
or
it could be a 20-minute journey.
You could, just take the process.
You get your ass beat one time and be like, nope, that ain't it. Or, you know, no, it's a process that, I mean, well, so I'm significantly older than a lot of you. And so the reason why it took 20 years is because we did not have access to things like social media, the internet, other folks' podcasts, things like this where we could really learn a lot of stuff. We were very much underground. A lot of people were forced to kind of do things by themselves. We had, you know, websites like FetLife came up or these other ones, but we didn't have this kind of way of communicating about this 20 years ago. So I think had we, I would have probably gotten there a lot quicker. And so folks today, like, I don't expect you to have an invest a whole generation. It's a
whole goddamn person.
What you like. But I would say that the journey's been fun. And so since moving to Philadelphia, you know, definitely connecting with a local munch group and mm-hmm. being able to go to more events and finding more people of color in this space and really building that community has been really important to me. So that's been fun. It's mm-hmm. been really fun lately. Yeah. Having a great time.
Well, speaking of people of color in this mm-hmm. space, mm-hmm. I was reading an article that you wrote for Complex about mm-hmm. 2 years ago or mm-hmm. something called Yes Master.
Yeah.
And it dealt with the complexities yeah. of being into kink yeah. as a black person. Yeah. And you had said when you first started, back when you were mm-hmm. 19, you kind of felt like shame mm-hmm. in mm-hmm. participating in such activities. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about why that was?
Yeah, there were some elements that I felt I couldn't really reconcile, like, why would a black person want to be chained up?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would a black person want to be whipped or flogged or anything that resembled mm-hmm. how enslaved people were treated, mm-hmm. right? And couldn't really understand, like, why do I like this? Why does this feel good? And that's part of living an alternative lifestyle. You don't always yeah. have the answers. You can try to find them. You can try to rationalize it. But at the end of the day, it's, you just like what you like.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to really think about that. I have mentors in the lifestyle, and I've had people that I've been able to talk to. And I think everybody goes through that. I think every black person at some point is like, why the hell are we putting ourselves in chains? but then it becomes one of those things where you're like, what is reclamation and what is ownership and what is agency and what is choice and how do these things empower us? And I think the kink world is one of those areas and one of those spaces where there's so much empowerment that can happen, not just for black people, but for women, for people that are survivors of sexual assault, mm-hmm. all those kinds of things. I think that it could be really powerful when you're surrounded with the right people. Mm-hmm. So I did have that early on because, again, I didn't have many people around me I didn't have anybody that was doing it.
Yeah.
And I think also because the first partner that I had was abusive. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like trying to deal with that. Like, here I am, this like strong woman that everybody's kind of looking at. Like, how am I in this kind of a situation where I'm being abused? Mm-hmm. Right. So there was a lot of that. And that caused me to step back a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I came back to it, I started thinking, well, I don't want this. And I know that I won't deal with this, but I do like this. And so let me start to think about it. And mm-hmm. I think writing the book, and writing these different articles and things like that has really helped me articulate my feelings on them and be able to share with other people. Like when I did the article for Ebony about race play
mm-hmm.
and interviewing Molina, who is a top voice in that, I still don't fuck with race play.
Yeah.
I still don't like it. And but I understand why people do it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's all I really need is to, once I understand why people do it, whether I agree with it or not,
mm-hmm.
It's their choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I get it. And I'm always one of those people that's like, I just want to get it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of kinks that I'm just like, no, like absolutely not.
Yeah.
But then there's some that people can say about me that they're like, no, absolutely mm-hmm. not. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's one of those things where it's like, let's just have a productive conversation. Let's not attack each other or whatever. But
mm-hmm.
some shit I just ain't getting with. Like, it ain't.
Your kink is your kink.
Your kink is your kink, but that shit ain't coming to my house. Like, nope. You know, but I don't talk to people in that way because mm-hmm. I don't want to make them feel shame mm-hmm. for it. But in my heart, I'm like, fuck you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nope.
So yeah. Along that process mm-hmm. where you kind of felt like this internal tension, like, okay, I'm a black person. Yeah. We have this history of chattel slavery. Yeah. Where did you come to reconcile that?
I came to a point of what feels good, right? So
mm-hmm.
I think we can align the conversations in kink at the same, which is vanilla, I guess, so-called vanilla sexuality. It's like people that grew up in the church, like, learned some really negative, sex negative ideas about mm-hmm. sex, and you don't do that, and good girls don't do that, and, you know, and you're not supposed to do that, boys don't do this with boys, girls, you know, all of that stuff, and you unlearn it at some point, hopefully, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you just decide, I like having three fingers in my ass. Thank you very much, Jesus. And I'm going to do this. And so I think that's that same kind of thing happens on the kink side. It's like, well, I'm not a slave. I'm not like,
yeah,
nobody
not an
bought
actual,
me.
Yeah.
I was not sent over on a boat. I was not purchased. I was not on an auction block. I can walk away from this at any time that I want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that ownership and that agency is really what changed it. And so being able to say, I like the way this feels,
mm-hmm.
and it's not the same thing.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much it.
It's
right?
quite literally not the same thing.
That's exactly how you just, that's it. It's mm-hmm. not the same thing.
Is there a freedom that comes in it, though,
mm-hmm.
that helps
absolutely.
You reconcile that
absolutely.
History of slavery that we've...
Absolutely. And I think, well, one, I only play with black people,
mm-hmm.
With people of color. I have friends that are
black
in
black people or people of color?
Well, how good do they look? I don't know. You know,
that is a valid question.
I'm going to say this. I'm open to people of color.
Mm-hmm.
I have friends in the lifestyle that are white.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of play partners and people that I get intimate with, it's only black people or Afro Latinos, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sorry, thinking about all the white men that want me to control them. I can make so much damn money off
of
that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. You make a pretty ass penny.
No, I think that journey of reconciliation and being able to be in those spaces is so empowering, because we're just like, we're black, we're here, we're allowed to be here. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like, when you think about enslavement and you think about Jim Crow and all these ways in which black people were told, you can't do this, you can't do this, you can't do this. Here we are kind of showing up in this kink space, which is known for being like heavily white and mm-hmm. things like that. And we're like, well, no, we're here too.
Mm-hmm.
And we can do anything that we want to do. And mm-hmm. I think that that's a lot of where the empowerment comes in. I don't think we think too much about the slavery thing.
Because mm-hmm. That's kind of weird, right?
It's like, I'm walking into a dungeon. Damn, my people were enslaved, but I'm about to be tied up in some chains. So how do I work this out? Fuck it. You know, yeah. Beat my ass. You know,
yeah.
Who wants to deal with that every single time? Uh-huh. But there are people who are just like, I will not be called a slave. I will not be called a master. You know, and that's their choice. That is totally fine. Like, mm-hmm. you got to do what you got to do just to be happy. That's the whole point of this lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
Finding your truth, living your truth and being happy.
Mm-hmm.
Like, fuck what other people say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back to Feminisha Jones in just a moment. But I just want to talk to y'all real quick about birth control and accessibility, because it's exciting and new and might even help you or someone you know in the long run. So today's episode of the Inner Heart Uprising is also sponsored by Simple Health, and they're here to make your healthcare simple, as you could tell by the name, right? So they're starting out by simplifying birth control access with online prescriptions and home delivery. Did you know that over 20 million folks with uteruses in America lack reasonable access to something as basic and fundamental as contraception? You probably had an idea because you listened to this feminist-ass, queer-ass, black-ass show. The healthcare system here in America can prevent folks with uteruses from getting the care they need, whether it's insurance barriers or income or physical location, so on and so forth. So Simple Health actually wants to alleviate some of those barriers. With Simple Health, you can get your birth control prescribed online and delivered to your door for free. It's affordable, convenient, and safe. Whether you're already on birth control, looking to get back on, or want to try it for the first time, Simple Health has your back. So at this point, 2018 going on 2019 very soon, you can order anything online, from erectile dysfunction meds to vibrators, so why not go on and get your birth control online also? So here's how it works. You fill out a comprehensive online health profile and answer some questions formulated to get the best birth control for you. So your body, your preferences, your health insurance situation, they take it all into account. A medical doctor will review your profile, figure out if you're a good candidate for birth control, recommend a product, and write a prescription. Then your birth control ships to your door on a recurring schedule. No interruptions. I hate those interruptions. My pharmacy used to mess me up all the time with that. And just to be clear, Simple Health isn't making their own birth control or anything weird like that. They only prescribe trusted and vetted brands of birth control. So that includes pills, the patch, the ring, all that. And if you're already on birth control and just simply tired of dealing with your pharmacy, it's even easier. You just fill in your pharmacy and insurance information and they'll start shipping your birth control to you for free. And best of all, Simple Health offers affordable care regardless of insurance. Now, they do accept insurance, and luckily, birth control is free with most insurance plans. But for folks without insurance, the average cost is just $18 a month, depending on the exact type prescribed, and delivery is free for everyone. The prescription is usually $20 a month, but you IHU homies get to try it for free. Just go to simplehealth.com/inner or enter code INNER at checkout. Now, I do want to mention that this isn't a replacement for routine evaluations by your primary care physician or gynecologist, but it is the most convenient and comfortable way to get your birth control. Again, don't miss your chance to try this awesome service for free. Go to simplehealth.com/inner or just enter code INNER, that's INNER, at checkout. If you have a uterus and would like to use birth control, this is going to save you a lot of time and money. And if you don't have a uterus, tell someone in your life about Simple Health and help improve uterus folks' access to healthcare. Everybody wins. It's simple. It's Simple Health. Come on. All right. Let's get back to the conversation with Feminista Jones.
Delving a little bit more into trauma. So you talk a lot about
the fact that you have experienced sexual trauma mm-hmm. throughout the course of your mm-hmm. life and the ways in which BDSM has kind of helped you reconcile with that. Can you talk about that?
Of course. It's something that I've really been talking about for like the last 2 to 3 years, and I'm mm-hmm. trying to develop more workshops around it because I'm coming from somebody who has spent well over a decade working as a mental health social worker, mm-hmm. working with people who have survived all types of traumas. And our job is to find ways to help people heal and recover. And they are not always standard approaches. You have to go with what works for people when you're developing their treatment plans and mm-hmm. things like that. Like, I may not believe that prayer is a solution. Somebody else might. So there's, you have to put that in their treatment plan because it works for them. And so when we start thinking of alternative ways to approach healing and recovery, I think we should consider kink for some people, particularly people that find themselves interested and not really understanding why. And once they start delving and realizing that they've had these traumas that have been unreconciled, I think that the kink realm can be a very safe space for that. Mm-hmm. One, it's very controlled. Mm-hmm. For the most part, there's always going to be the reckless folks, but the BDSM community, particularly when we do public play and parties, is very controlled, mm-hmm. very moderated. There's a lot of negotiation going on, right? Mm-hmm. So when you think about being a victim of abuse or trauma or assault, you have no consent. You often caught off guard. It's like you feel like you have no power, whereas in these situations, you can negotiate exactly what's going to happen. You set the tone. You decide this is what's going to happen and this is what I'm agreeing to and I'm not. So just even in being able to say, yes, I want this, mm-hmm. there's an empowerment there. And then you get to control what happens, like what's happening to you or what you're doing to someone else. Mm-hmm. I think that that's really important. I think the elements of communication, communication is stressed so much. And I think that that's an important element of healing and recovering, mm-hmm. being able to speak freely and truthfully mm-hmm. to people that you know will not judge you is mm-hmm. really super important. And then I think just experiencing even the tactile parts of it, but also the aftercare of these things. It's like there's that element of, yes, I just endured this thing that on the surface was painful, but it helped me work through this. And afterwards, this person is showing me love. They're showing me affection. They're showing me tenderness. They're showing me care in a way that I never got. After I was victimized, mm-hmm. right? And I wasn't able to get that there. Mm-hmm. So I think that there's so many, and this is a short version, but I think that there's a lot of ways in which those of us that are professionals, right? And you get your clinicians involved and things like that. And I'm not the only one that thinks this way. There's other people that are working on this as well. Mm-hmm. But when you get these people that are trained in kink positive clinicians to be able to work with folks in this way, this could be another way. Mm-hmm. It helped me. It helped mm-hmm. me. I could not, like, as a survivor of sexual assault, I had gotten to a point where I wasn't connected to my body. Like, people could touch me and I didn't feel anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I did not feel anything. I could go through the motions of sex and whatever, but I felt nothing. And I think it was just because of automatic response of disconnecting mm-hmm. from whatever was happening to my body. Mm-hmm. And I think once I got involved with kink and just to be clear, not all kink involves kind of physical things, but I am very much a sadomasochist. Mm-hmm. But once I got into that, I started realizing I could feel again. Like, it took a flogger for me to feel. It took a paddle for me to feel. It mm-hmm. took these things for me to actually start to feel physically, like the nerves in my body mm-hmm. During intimate times. And it helped my body come alive again. And so now I don't need that stuff anymore. I can actually just have straight up sex and feel it mm-hmm. for when I couldn't before. Mm-hmm. So I know for me it worked. And I know that it if it could work for one person, it could work for others that mm-hmm. are open to that. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think it's an area that's worth exploring.
For sure.
For sure.
Do you think that, because that was kind of like told from the perspective of, even though you are mm-hmm. a dom, it was kind of mm-hmm. like from a sub perspective, mm-hmm. what is the reverse in where someone who identifies as a dom can use BDSM to overcome previous trauma?
Well, I think identifying as a dom doesn't mean that you can't be on the receiving end of things. Mm-hmm. But I also think that, again, you're still able to have a situation, you can set up a scene where you are in control of things. So for me, as I am working with people that are bottoming, for me, I think a big part of it is showing them the care that I wish I got, and showing them the connection and mm-hmm. tenderness, like asking them, are you okay? Do you enjoy this? Do you want this? You want me to keep going?
Yeah.
How are you feeling? I think that there's a part of that, that it's like there's healing in that, being able to extend that to them when that wasn't extended to me.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that doms have to be a bit more creative, but it can happen. Mm-hmm. Again, I think it's about the healing is in the communication and the negotiation and the consent.
Yeah.
And so however that manifests in whatever you do, I think that that's fine.
That's so cool. Yeah. As a mental health professional, like, do you see yourself, like, how would that look in regards to, like, a, I guess, a doctor-patient sort of relationship? Like,
oh, well, that was the question I was going to ask.
Yeah. What is the treatment plan?
Is it, are we presenting this to clients, or are we waiting for them to discuss their enjoyment of kink? Like, how does that conversation, or how would that conversation come up?
Honestly, I would not try to put this on anybody who hasn't shown any interest or anything in kink, because that transition into this life can also be traumatic. Yes. There's a lot of stuff that goes, if you're not introducing someone into this lifestyle well, and I don't think that I was introduced well, so I can speak from experience, but there's positive ways of introducing and there's some negative. And so we don't want to, like, re-traumatize people. But I think that if you are in tune with your clients and the people that you're working with, and you start to see signs that they may have these alternative interests, it might be a conversation to bring up. There are some survivors that I've worked with that have a very keen interest in, like, erotic literature. And it's like, that feels safe for them. That's a safe connection to sex and sexuality, just to read about it and to be able to imagine and fantasize. Like, looking at porn is a little too much for them, and being in the sex, but just reading a story is really helpful. So maybe, like, introducing stories to them that may have more of a kinkier edge or something where their mind is able to kind of play things out, and it just feels a little bit better, and they can close it when it's too much and go back to it. You know, this, like I said, there's so many ways that we can really explore this. We just have to kind of think about it. I had somebody said it was like, I have an IRB, let's do this. I was like, I got a lot going on right now. I'm like, but hold that thought, you know, because I'm never done, right? So
this kind of reminds me of chapter 5 in the book, the talk sex chapter, where you're talking about
from reclaiming our space.
Many books. Like, my bad. where you're talking about the fact that we kind of have, like, disjointed stories when it comes to African Americans and sex, and maybe one of the reasons why we're not to the place where we can actually, like, do these prescriptions is because we haven't talked about it enough.
Can
you talk a little bit about that idea?
Well, first of all, did you like the
yes chapter? I did, and I can't wait till the book comes out.
Like is not the word for it. I was like, oh my gosh. They only gave
y'all
me
better get
five?
Y'all pre-order on Amazon. Y'all better get your pre-order.
No, we'll get you a copy, because we're about to do another mailing. So thank you all for having me, so we'll get you guys a copy. that was a fun, so let me just say quickly, approaching the book, I was just like, I know what I want to say, and I could say it so plainly, but I need to back this up. I need all the thoughts that I have, I need them to be backed up. I need this to be academic. I need it to be easy to read, but I need to back this up. And so I really was so happy that all my friends are brilliant. Pretty much everyone I've cited in this book who is alive today is a friend of mine. And so all the doctors and everything, all the experts. And so, like, my friend Tracy is doing some amazing, amazing, amazing work in Black sexuality that has not been done before. And it's just like, the fact that there's work that can be done on our sexuality that hasn't been done before is because no one has ever cared enough about us as human beings to study our sexuality. And so I talk about that in the book, because a lot of our disconnect is because we don't have any real understanding of our history and our connection with sexuality, because no one has studied it from any point of view other than pathology. And it's just like trauma and victimization. And it's like, when do we talk about Black pleasure? And who wrote it? I want to say it was Stacey Patton wrote about why Black academics, like Black people in the academy, won't study sexuality, why they avoid it, because they don't want to like disconnect from their white colleagues and things like that. And I'm like, get out of here. I was like, the same way women have been pushing to be studied in sexuality, right? Sexuality studies, which they got the NIH. Now they won't fund any studies that don't include women when it comes to sexuality. Black people need to push for the same things because our experiences are not the same. We are coming from trauma. Black Americans, our sexuality is rooted in trauma. It's either the trauma or it's the conservative religiosity, right? Which can also be very traumatic to people. So the combination of those two, it's like, when I say that I was physically disconnected from feeling myself, I feel like that's a microcosm for what Black people in sexuality, we are disconnected from that. And when we decide to feel pleasure, that's a statement of ownership. That's an act of ownership. We're not supposed to own our own bodies, mm-hmm. right? Even to this day. And so particularly when Black women say we own our bodies, we experience pleasure on our own terms, that's fucking radical, right? Yeah. So we have to really kind of push for that. And so I think for me, when I came into this space as a sex positive feminist, people were like, well, why did you go that way? And I was like, well, one, there's no real Black faces here. It's yeah. a lot of the heavy sex positive feminist work has been fully white women. Mm-hmm. And then two, it's like, well, freedom is liberation of the body. Like, if you don't get to make the choices on what you do with your own body, there's no other yeah. discussion. Like, yeah, it starts with that. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it wasn't just like about sex, the act. It was like the sex of being female or, you know, a cis woman or trans, whatever. Like, this idea that you can identify your own body the way that you want through your own sexual identity is a radical thing for Black women mm-hmm. and Black people. So I really wanted to kind of explore that and push those. But
I see what you did there.
I wasn't trying to. It's so, let me tell you, it's so wild. Every time I talk about sex, I end up saying the phrase push the button. I'm like, God damn it. Like, I'm trying not to be corny.
You just gotta work it in.
Try not to be corny. But yeah, so the chapter really was fun to write, because some of my most fun work has been the sex kind of stuff, the sex mm-hmm. writing. And while I've moved away from that, mainly because everybody's regurgitating me anyway these days, so I kind of let folks do what they do. Like seriously, like stuff that people think is groundbreaking, I watch on Twitter. I was like, I wrote that in 2013, family. Like, it's not new. And it, I wasn't necessarily new when I did it, except for Hoes Don't Exist. But, mm-hmm. you know, that was a big deal. but, yeah, I love that I've been able to contribute to the Black sexuality kind of canon in this way, mm-hmm. non-traditional way.
Yeah.
Right? So that's been fun.
Can you talk about the importance of the non-tradition? Mm-hmm. Because although it is super important for mm-hmm. academics to study our mm-hmm. sexuality, mm-hmm. academia is like wild, inaccessible.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So where are the kind of spaces that we should absolutely. Be having this conversation in addition to academia?
Everywhere, right?
Yeah.
On the corner, on Twitter, podcasts, mm-hmm. wherever we can have them.
Yeah.
And I think in the book I also cite Leslie Jones, who's at Penn right now, kind of studying this idea of how knowledge is shared and how Black women are redefining how knowledge is shared. Mm-hmm. And it's very similar to kind of what I was writing in my book, but she's way more theoretical and it's brilliant. But yes, I think that when it comes to sex and sexuality, we may just have to have these conversations outside of the academy if we want to see anything done,
yeah. mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
And we need to be able to have our sister circles and our podcasts and our roundtables and our conferences. Mm-hmm. Like Poly Dallas Millennium is dope, 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 yeah. right? but we need to have those things, because that's really the only place we're going to share this knowledge right now,
mm-hmm.
As we push forward. And then we have to prove that there is enough of a cultural interest in this for the Academy to take it seriously. Look what happened with hip hop, right? It took a long yeah, time for the yeah. Academy to come around. Now every hip white person mm-hmm. is teaching about a hip hop artist, right?
Yeah.
When it was Black folks who grew up in hip hop who mm-hmm. laid that academic foundation, who mm-hmm. don't even really get the love for it. But every kind of cultural experience should be studied
mm-hmm.
and put mm-hmm. into the academy, because it exists. That's what I tell people, you know, the main reason I wrote this book is like, I want people to, from 100 years from now, to know we were here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We existed. We did these things. Mm-hmm. Like, we made these things happen, and somebody's got to document this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I went about doing. So that's pretty dope.
That is pretty dope.
pretty dope.
And
they're all my friends.
That's so cool. That is so cool.
Like that's like
what I want to do.
Yeah, like that is like my life work yes. is to do what I love yes. and bring all
exactly.
my
exactly.
girls and their brilliance.
They're
exactly.
They're all my friends. And I, you know, I credit, again, the whole book is about how we've been able to find community and build community mm-hmm. online and connect with women we probably would not have ever been able to. And mm-hmm. so that's been a huge, huge, huge gift to my life, is all these Black women who are just so freaking awesome in their own ways. Super, super brilliant women. And even the ones who haven't had access to the academy mm-hmm. are still just out there articulating things that folks are not really thinking about, and being able to share it in lay women's terms, right? And I'm like, that's important. That's so freaking important. I'm a hood girl. Like I'm like, I want to be able to, don't talk about me cussing. I'm a cuss. Like, I'm say what the fuck I want to say. And, but you get what I'm saying, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so like Lauryn Hill says, she said, I'll add a motherfucker so you ignorant niggas hear me. You know, like I'll do what I need to do to get the message out. And there are people who are just kind of rejecting this idea that black people could, that black women can own knowledge. Mm. And so they don't want to hear us and they silence us. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, fuck you.
Yeah.
Because no matter what you steal and what you plagiarize, this is in us. Mm-hmm. This is in our heads. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you can't take that.
I do want to talk about Twitter specifically.
Yes,
because you are
Twitter.
So prevalent on Twitter, right?
First person I followed on.
Oh, right?
Like
not as much anymore.
Back in the day,
you know what? I only got back more recently because I started working from home. So I'm just like, but not as much anymore. But yeah. No, I have a pretty decent following.
And you like the important conversations are being had on Twitter,
absolutely.
And like the. I guess
absolutely.
Pushing the conversation forward type
absolutely.
Conversations are being had on Twitter. Mm-hmm, but also absolutely. There's so much fuck shit. And
yeah.
you go through it a lot.
Yeah. I got a whole chapter in there about the hoteps.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
You know
yeah.
why? Because I'm the one who coined hotep Twitter.
What?
Yeah. Many, 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 many years ago.
Yeah.
I came up with hashtag
a legend.
You are also,
Twitter.
I mean, you are already an internet legend, but like also right. UOK Sis, that was
yeah.
also you,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
National
yeah.
moment of silence
yes,
where people
me.
Were organizing
yep, like
in Roy Wilkins
over.
Park
yep,
in 2014.
Yep, all of that. It's fun. no, but I had, so again, I'm documenting that we were here. This mm-hmm. is what we did and this is the truth.
Yeah.
And so, you know, even, like sidebar, like my friend Dylan, he's the one who popularized Stay Woke and everybody's talking about woke. I'm
oh,
like,
shit.
He was doing this kind of like sarcastically years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like now all of a sudden y'all talking about woke wasn't supposed to be that serious. Like, you know, same thing with Pretty Brown Girl and Black Girls Are Magic. Like there's
yeah.
an origin story for all these things. We have
yeah.
to tell those truths.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a whole thing where I talk about the fuck shit. Right. And it's really, that's part of why like I pulled back because I'm not getting any younger and these motherfuckers not about to stress me out. I'm not about to have a heart attack or a stroke or anything else over any of these people.
Mm-hmm.
It started affecting, having a very negative effect on my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And things have gotten progressively worse for me as the longer that I've been on social media.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, nah, I'm good. Being stalked, being harassed, being followed, that shit is not cool. Having people, I haven't changed my phone number because I was getting all these like prank calls. I've been doxxed, you know, moving from New York in part because of people,
oh, wow.
you know, the threats and things like
mm-hmm.
that. So, yeah, y'all can kiss my ass. Y'all are not paying my bills, so I'm
mm-hmm.
not going through this. But I don't think we've had a more important medium.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Like ever.
Yeah.
and it's a shame that Twitter and Jack and all of Jack Dorsey and all of them are assholes. It's a shame that Mark Zuckerberg is a complete asshole because what they did was they gave us one of the greatest gifts and one of the greatest tools that black people could ever have in this liberation movement, and that's the ability to connect worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
Because that has always been the biggest thing to keep us separated, to make sure,
yeah.
to dismantle it, right, to make sure that we don't come together. And that's what they're so afraid of. That's why the Black Lives Matter movement has terrified people. Like, they're like, wait a minute, they've come together.
Yeah.
In one accord.
Yeah.
Across the world.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck is about to
what
happen?
What are we going
to
do? Yeah.
Right? So that's why they installed this fool and that we have now as a president. But, you know, that is terrifying. I'm like, yo, that is power.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to be on Twitter and have those conversations, start those conversations, critique those who say the stupid shit. I've been critiqued for saying stupid shit. You know, this whole thing with like Kevin Hart and, you know, what about people digging tweets from a long time ago? I've had that happen to me and it's embarrassed me.
Mm-hmm.
It hasn't made me like mad. I'm like, the fuck was you thinking back then? More like, you know, it's more like that. And it's like, you know, oh, well, she went and deleted them. Yeah, I deleted them because I don't want that. I don't want that out there. Like,
that's not who I am.
Mm-hmm. And it's harmful. Why am I going to leave something harmful up?
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of like, damn, like, I should have never said that stuff. But at the time, I wasn't where I am right now. Mm-hmm. So when people bring stuff up from the past, like if I feel like they're just like, I want to know why, whatever, I'll have the conversation with them and I'll apologize because it's just wrong. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people just want to throw stuff up in your face mm-hmm. and just to try to harm you. And yeah. I don't get down with that.
Yeah.
So I have to deal with that stuff. I have to deal with people who just won't let anything go. Mm-hmm. Remember what she said about Beyonce? Yeah, I know I remember what I said about Beyonce, and I shouldn't have said it, but I love her. And I spent more than you pay for your rent on tickets, so shut the fuck up. You know, like that kind of thing. And we have to allow people to grow. We have to allow for people to mature. And that's the downside of the digital media is mm-hmm. that, like they say, screenshots are forever. Mm-hmm. But should they be? Mm. Right? Like, you can screenshot somebody saying something and then 2 years later you want to bring it up to them and it's like, okay, so why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. Do you believe that this person is exactly the same? Mm-hmm. Or have you seen evidence that they're not? Mm-hmm. So what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, we have to challenge ourselves, yeah. right? This whole cancel culture thing, I think it's rather
Is there even, like, are there rules in your, like, what would you do? This is hella off topic.
No, I get it.
But like, you know, if you were Kevin Hart, and I don't think that
Kevin
he
Hart,
is.
If I was Kevin Hart, I would not have said, he's just being a jerk, because it's like, it's not hard to say, you know what, I said some stuff a long time ago mm-hmm. that was messed up, mm-hmm. and it's not who I am right now, and I'm sorry for what I said, and I'm sorry that, you know, these words are coming back up and that they're harming other people again. You know, that's not what I want to do, mm-hmm. and I'm sorry, mm-hmm. and I'm working on being a better person. That's not hard to say.
Yeah.
But Kevin... Okay, I said I wasn't going to make any short jokes, so I'm not. But he's got this ego thing, right, that unfortunately is going to be the downfall of a lot of men, especially brothers. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't want people to see me being wrong in this instance because they're going to try to make me wrong for everything else. Mm-hmm. And brothers get pinned for being wrong for so many things.
Yeah.
So it's almost like he feels like, if I don't stand fast with this,
this is where then it's, you know,
I'm always apologizing.
Yeah, yeah, I'm always apologizing. And so, you know, but it's not hard to just say, you know, I was messed up when I was younger. I shouldn't have said that stuff. I was messed up 2 weeks ago. I shouldn't have said that.
Yeah.
It can
he
happen.
He was messed up 2 weeks
it can,
ago.
Right? Because I tweet high a lot. So, I be in the fucking clouds sometimes. I be like, and I'll go back and read stuff, and people will be like, yo, where was that tweet? I was like, I deleted that shit. You ain't gonna find that whole night. You ain't gonna find it, because I don't know what the hell I was thinking about. You know, but you gotta be honest about that, and we, nobody's perfect. There's a, mm-hmm. I write about this in the book, too. I write about, you know, this idea of the problematic fave, mm-hmm. right? And how none of us is shit. Ain't none of us
shit. We literally
shit.
Can't be. Like, we were conditioned to not like, to be trash.
I'm like, you can go online and say all this bullshit you want, but when you are in your group chats and your group me and your WhatsApp and all of that shit, you are as much an asshole as you were 10 years ago, and stop fucking lying.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You don't want to mess up your coins. You don't want to mess up whatever reputation, but we all make the stupid jokes. We all make the crass jokes. We all say the things that we wouldn't say public because we don't want to jeopardize things. Mm-hmm. And I know this for a fact because, again, these are all my friends. Mm-hmm. So I know, ooh. You know, yeah. So it's like, you know, no, but it's like, let's be real about that. Yeah. Let's put that out there mm-hmm. because I'm going to let you know that that is my authentic self while I'm also bringing you this other stuff. Mm-hmm. And I can say, look, I'm trying to be better. And I have, like, I am, like, trying to be better, and it's a constant journey. Mm-hmm. And that's all we could really do, mm-hmm. you know. But a lot of the pettiness, and again, I think maybe I'm just aging out of it, mm-hmm. and that's fine. But I'm like, y'all can have the mean girl thing. Y'all can...
Is there a way to engage in Twitter without all that bullshit?
Yeah, no, for sure. Uh-huh. I have mad filters.
Okay. Oh, that's what it is.
I literally don't see...
We mute in.
I probably see about 60% of what's sent to me because of the words that I have, like, filtered. And then I block, like for Tariq, all his followers, I blocked them all.
Don't
and
say that.
I'm sorry.
I think it's like Voldemort.
That's okay.
They will like do an algorithm to hear it in
this. He's not going. He can say whatever the hell he wants. Yeah. He tried to sue me once and kiss my ass.
Oh my God.
No, but you know, folks like that, like I'll block a lot of their, they'll still tweet me, but I don't see none of that. Mm-hmm. And that's important. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, I miss a lot of good stuff from the good people, but I think that they understand.
Yeah.
And so, the more followers I have and the more my popularity has spread, I'm like, just understand that I can't engage as much as I used to. Mm-hmm. I can't respond to everybody. I try to respond as much as I can because I like conversation too. So I like to be on there and to have fun and to tell jokes and talk about TV shows or movies or my new kitties or whatever. But for my own self-care, sometimes I just have to mute things mm-hmm. and filter things. Mm-hmm. I do more on Instagram now.
Oh,
I used to not be as active on Instagram, but Instagram, I feel like I can kind of just, this is who I am. Mm-hmm. Y'all get to see it.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
I think it's a little bit safer for me over there.
I think Twitter is the most unsafe because you can just retweet.
Yeah.
And people, anybody in the world can see what the hell is going on.
And people will misconstrue things mm-hmm. to just try
It's so short.
To sell you. You know, there's people that do that with me regularly. And I'm like, all right, well, if that made your day.
I'm glad that you're so calm about it.
Well, so here's the thing. I deposited a lot of checks, so I'm all right. I've had my low points, I've had my difficult times, but I got to say that, you know, my career has done really well because of the connections I've been able to make on social media. Mm-hmm. And so, again, I can't let folks get in the way of my...
Not the bag.
No, that's not it. That's... No, thank you. You know, so...
That's good. I just want to ask one more kind of in-depth question because we have 20 minutes left.
No problem.
So this one is switching back to kink and kind of like notions of patriarchy specifically as it pertains to Black people, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you are a Black woman dom and you have a Black man sub, right?
Until recently, yes.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, it's okay.
Okay.
No. Sometimes you separate and let people
and
find their ways. Yeah, but
okay.
I did for a minute, yes.
And so how did, if at all, in the specific kink community that you were rolling in, how did notions of Black masculinity and Black femininity impact how y'all were viewed?
That's a great question. We still struggle with that in our community, and we still struggle with a lot of queer phobia in that community. As much as people are trying to be open and accepting, there's still some like deeply rooted, you know, issues there that come out in things. So if you talk about something like pegging, for example, and for those who don't know what pegging is, I hope you do if you listen to this
podcast.
You gotta
know what
pegging
is.
Smith has said at least once every episode.
There you go. So if you don't, so when we talk about that, right, you know, they'll say something like, can't be me. And it's like, okay, that's nice, but did you have to say that? Like, as they'll say it in a way that kind of like somehow questions the guy's so-called masculinity. And it's just like, don't do that, bruh. Like, if this is what a person likes, this is what they like. I thought this was supposed to be a space where people can do what it is that they want to do. I've had him providing service in ways that are very visible and very, I'm very high protocol. Look that up for people that don't know what that means. So I'm very particular about my service. And so having people like kind of just like look at him like, what's wrong with him or things like that, that's so corny to me. But it is what it is. And so then there, I get approached by men who are doms or tops who have a submissive side. And they're just, they come to me because, like, they see me as, like, queen dom. And they're like, well, I can't tell anybody else this. But I just want to let you know that, you know, I would serve you. And I'm like, yeah, I know. But it's the fact that they got to be secretive about that, it really, really bothers me. And the fact that we question anybody's humanity. Right? Because it's not even an issue of like, oh, well, they assume that they're gay. Well, that's, well, what if they were gay? It's not a bad thing. But it's like, it's still within our community, calling a Black man gay is still an insult. And so navigating that and trying to understand how a Black cis man could not be gay or bisexual and be submissive to a woman is still something that people are struggling with.
You had a recent post on your Patreon about kink and consent.
Yes.
And I just recommend everybody read that because it was a good ass read.
Thank you.
But there's one point in it where you talk about these views and like these rigid structures of masculinity and femininity can lead to like people not coming forward when they're assaulted by their dom, for example.
Can you talk a little about that? And I mean, I think it goes both ways, right? Because there's physical and there's also emotional abuse and other forms within this kink community. But because we believe that we're supposed to behave in certain ways and, you know, we kind of accept certain behaviors because we feel like, well, we're in this alternative lifestyle and maybe this is part of what we're supposed to be doing. And it's like, no. And I had to learn, that was what Push the Button was about. It's like kind of my first experience with a so-called dom was an abusive one, but I engaged in these things because I thought that's what it was supposed to be. And I didn't really have the community or anybody to step in and be like, no, this is not right.
Yeah.
And I was able to split from him you know, in a very non-related way, but luckily I was able to split from him. But I didn't even recognize that. And so it happens so often in our community, and that's why we need mentors and we need more conversations about this is okay, this is not. This is okay, this is not. You need to be able to recognize the difference. And just because you consent to something doesn't mean that a person can't take advantage of that or can't abuse that, mm-hmm. you know? So we have to keep having those conversations. Oh my gosh, like, I think that's the biggest thing for me is really talking about the difference between kink and abuse, because I am an advocate for survivors of domestic and intimate partner violence. I do a lot of my work around that. And at the same time, it's like I'm also in a lifestyle where these actions can mimic it. Mm-hmm. But it's like you have to be able to articulate the difference. Mm-hmm. And that is tough. It is hard work, but I'm committed to it because it's important on both sides, right? It's, mm-hmm. it's important.
In that same article, you had also said, like, as a dom, it's difficult navigating that space to know, like, when your sub is doing something just because they feel obliged to.
Yes.
And you said something like, that's why only a certain kind of people can even be in this lifestyle.
Yes.
Who is that kind of person?
I think that, you know, they always say the thing safe, sane, and consensual. And mm-hmm. I think we've moved away from that because mm-hmm. of the ableism of that. But I do think that you're someone who has to know who you are. Mm. And so I see a lot of younger folks getting into kink, and I think it's cool. But you have a lot to learn about who you are.
Yeah.
So again, when we talked about the 20-year journey, that's something I do think takes a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It takes a long time to learn who you are just as a person.
Yeah.
And I think, and part of why I separated from my most recent, I said, you have some work to do on mm-hmm. you. Mm-hmm. And I started feeling that way, that you're only doing this because this is what you think you're supposed mm-hmm. to do, or because what you think I want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, no, I want you to submit to me because it is what you feel compelled to do.
Mm-hmm.
And not just because I'm Feminisa Jones either. That's the other part of it, right?
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's like not just so you can have the honor of saying that, right?
Yeah.
No, it's there's it goes both ways too. So it goes
so
both ways.
Complex.
It's so complex. And as a dom, it's like, I wouldn't even say as a dom, I would say as a sadist. And mm-hmm. for me, it's very mm-hmm. much like, I could fuck with you on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah.
And it would feel great to me. But mm-hmm. it's wrong. Mm-hmm. So I can't do it.
And that's the
kind of person that you need to be. It's like I can see somebody crying because they feel like they let me down. And that excites me. But it's wrong. It's wrong to say.
Fascinating.
That's why I'm not talking to you till tomorrow. You know, that's wrong. That's wrong.
Salt into the wounds and keep going.
Like, I will literally pour salt, and I'd rather do that.
That's what I was thinking.
I'd rather literally pour salt into your open wound than destroy your heart like that. But again, you have to be able to know when to say when. And I think that the strongest people in our lifestyle are the ones who know when to say when.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
I wish we could have you here for 3 hours.
I wish too.
I don't know if you can see my laptop, but there's so many questions I had to cross out.
Because
Asa was like, no, bitch, you gotta shut the fuck up. Y'all gotta shut the fuck up because she got things to do.
I'm taking a lunch break from my kid who's upstairs with my iPad. No, but that's part of my life, right?
Yeah.
It's juggling so much and like, I bring him along with me for something so that he can see what it is that mommy does.
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, he's got teachers that love me, right?
Yeah.
And so he's, like, he's so inspired by it. And so my mom used to do the same thing. My mom was an activist growing up. And, mm-hmm. you know, she took me to rallies and she took me to parades and mm-hmm. things like that. And that's how I got exposed to it at a very early age. So I do the same thing with him so he can see. And so when you get that new phone and when you get these things, you understand
because
mommy had to work to get the money to do it.
Yeah.
You know? So that's part of the juggle, but it's worth it because we out here changing lives.
Man. Oh, yeah.
We are. So I'm going to keep it going.
That's so amazing.
Yeah. I'm so happy to have been here. I apologize for sounding like...
I feel like I should have brought Dave to
meet.
Oh,
that would be so cute.
No, but this has been really great. I'm honored that you guys wanted to have me here.
Thank you so much for being here.
Honored that you are here in spite of sickness and fatigue and work.
That's all right. It's only going to get worse next year. This is the perfect time. Everybody now is calling. They want to book me for everything. I'm like, we better do it now because it's going to be really wild.
Speaking of which, tell us when the book comes out.
So Reclaiming Our Space drops January 29th. You can absolutely pre-order it now pretty much anywhere. A lot of folks have used Amazon because, you know, they don't charge you till they ship it or whatever. I ain't supposed to say that. I'm not supposed to promote.
Ooh.
I'm not supposed to promote any particular outlet.
We can cut that out.
You know, no, please leave it in. I'm just saying. I'm not supposed to say that. You can pre-order it. And honestly, like, people need to understand that pre-orders are really important because they signal to the marketing teams and they signal to the carriers that there's an interest there.
Yeah.
So we just had a big demand. And so, like, Amazon ordered a lot of copies, and my publisher is printing a number of copies that they don't usually print, you know, because of that. So the more pre-orders we have, the more interest we have, the more likely people will get behind the book, and really I can get placement. When you open the door in Barnes & Noble, you'll see my book there. So pre-orders do matter. A lot of people are like, well, I'll wait till it comes out. And I'm like, that's nice. But if you have the money now,
why not?
If you have it now, just order it, and then you'll have it that day.
Yeah.
So, you know, and then they have an audiobook.
Are you narrating it?
I am not. We were able to select a model. There was a you know, a voice actress that we were able to select. I'm really interested in hearing how she sounds. I liked what she did so far.
Is she black?
She's black, of course.
Cool. Okay,
of course. What the hell?
That would be ass backwards. That would be ass backwards.
What in Melina? No. So yes, January 29th, you can go to reclaimingourspace.com and learn more about it. I'm going to be speaking all over the country, so catch me if you can. Go to my website, feministajones.com, and you'll see, like, the list of everywhere I'm going to be. And follow me on Twitter and Instagram and all that great stuff.
And I must say, from what the snippet we got, it is...
I'm so ready to read
it. Like, it was such an easy read for such a heavy topic, which, like, I wasn't surprised. Yeah. But, like, when you're used to reading this in, like, academia, it's so...
dense.
So unnecessary. It's like jargon on top of words. And it was just like, I was reading this, and I was like,
it's accessible. So accessibility was really important for me. Like, this is something that can be taught in college, but also can be read on the bus, right?
Exactly.
By somebody. And it's short. The book itself is short, and we lowered the price again, so it's $14.95 now. I skipped hardcover so that I could keep the price low. So that was a choice that we made. And I'm happy. So now that it's $14.95, it's accessible, you know, so please, you know, go out and
y'all,
get it.
That
and
affordable, concise, ready for pre-order. Why haven't you bought it yet?
Yeah, really.
Why haven't you pre-ordered yet?
Yeah.
No, but there's a lot of buzz around it, so I'm excited. Yay. And I just want it in people's hands.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yes.
How does it feel? This is your third book.
This is my third
book. Which is like, wow.
It's cool. It's the first time on a major publishing company and distributor, but it is the third one, and each one has a different feel and different meaning and things like this. But this is fun because I feel like this is what needs to really be in people's hands. This is going to save some lives, I think. So,
yeah. Yay.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. Great fucking episode.
I am standing. I feel like my life's purpose has been Well, not my life's purpose.
You can't just lay down and die now. You have so much left.
Like, you know, like I've accomplished something great today.
Yes, I feel like that also.
You know, and that I feel whole.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I agree with that. Once again, if you guys want to pre-order Feminista Jones's book or follow her on Instagram, Twitter, and all those kinds of things, link to Reclaiming Our Space will be in the description for this episode. All her social medias will be in the description for this episode as well. And
if you guys would like to follow us, you can do so on social media at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, at Inaho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook with the G. You go to InahoUprising.com to buy some merch or pay a hoe. You guys can follow me, Akua, at Hey Akua Girl, HEYYAKUAGIRL on Twitter and Instagram.
You can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter. And yesterday, on a whim, when I was taking a shit, I was like, oh, I have so many travel pictures and I want to share them with the world. And I have so many pictures of food that I want to share with the world. But I don't like to do it on my regular page because that's for pictures of my ass and things like that. So I created a travel Instagram called Carmen San Diego. That's Sam. It's a pun with my name, like Carmen San Diego. And you can follow that as well. That's it.
Yay.
Bye. Thank you. Bye.